Welcome to the South Cars Outreach Program. Join our training session in progress.
Welcome to the Outreach Program sponsored by the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This program has been established to help those wishing to learn more about our hobby and to further assist those wishing to upgrade license status. The program tonight will be in an in-depth course pertaining to what one should know when studying for the general class license. This course will be conducted with two sessions weekly, which will be at 7 p.m., 2300 Zulu, each Tuesday, and 7 p.m. each Sunday evening. For those that are already licensed and would wish a refresher course or would just like to listen, please connect to our SCARS South Coast Amateur Radio Service server at either Echolink node number 96140 or IRLP node 9614. For those who are interested, please contact myself, Mike, Kilo Delta Zero, Charlie Delta Quebec, via email at voip@voipnet.southcars.com to enroll in the class and be given directions as to the study material required and the manner that you will be connected into the course. The material being presented is formatted from data obtained from the ARRL and is simply being followed in a presentation format by SCARS. Should anyone take issue to some of the technical statements made, and in keeping with not interrupting the class and session, please convey your comments or suggestions to the outreach program at voip@voipnet.southcars.com. Letting it drop. Mention that this course covers only the requirements pertaining to the United States Part 97 rules and does not include other requirements that may be found in foreign countries. Should any other country other than the United States wish to have their own licensing session on this server, please drop us an email at voip@voipnet.southcars.com. The session this evening will be recorded and posted on our website at www.voip.southcars.com. Now please note, for all of our class members and instructors, it is extremely important that we all stay on the same page during these classes. The only question pool and copy thereof that should be used when participating in this class should be the one found posted on our website. Publications from other sources may or may not be current and should not be used during this session. Do we have any emergency or out of the ordinary business that needs to be handled before we start this evening's program? Okay, not hearing anyone. I'll give you a weather statement because it's coming your way. It's now 97 degrees in the Kansas City area. They say it feels like 101. The wind is supposed to be at 7, but when I look at the tallest trees, there's nothing moving up there. Nothing moving but maybe a cloud. So hot weather's coming your way. So at this point, we will begin. And who we will start with? We will start with Roger. Roger, who is a W4RFJ in Pennsylvania, will start with the class questions tonight. So Roger, when you're ready, take it away. Over.
And KD0CDQ, this is W4RFJ. Real quick, did Gordon get a chance to start the recording? I was having technical difficulties, and I'm not sure. I didn't hear it happen.
We're rolling. Thanks, Ryan.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, question number one, and welcome everybody, is from question G4A05. What is the reason, or what is a reason to use automatic level control, also known as ALC, with an RF power amplifier? The answers to choose from are A, to balance the transmitter audio frequency response, B, to reduce harmonic radiation, C, to reduce distortion due to excessive drive, and D, to increase overall efficiency. Now, this group of answers can be very confusing, but the answer is C, to reduce distortion due to excessive drive to the power amplifier. And basically what you're doing with the automatic level control is you're eliminating the overdriving capability of a transmitter to cause the RF power amplifier to splatter. I hope I was able to help out with that question, and we'll pause for any questions. This is W4RFJ.
Okay, not hearing any questions, I will pump it on over to Gary. Take it away, Gary.
Hey, thank you, Mike, and hello there to you, and hello there to Gordon, and hello there to Roger. And good to hear you again tonight, Chief. We've got our second question here for the set, and this is going to be G4A14. And it kind of follows along a little bit with what Roger was just talking about. Question goes, what is likely to happen if a transceiver's ALC system is not properly set when transmitting AFSK signals, rather, using with the radio using signal sideband mode? Now, here's your choices. A, ALC will invert the modulation of the AFSK mode. Or B, improper action of ALC distorts the signal and can cause spurious emissions. C, when using digital modes, too much ALC activity can cause the transmitter to overheat. Or D, all of these choices are correct. Well, the correct answer here is B, improper action of ALC distorts the signal and can cause spurious emissions. And let's talk about that in a minute. I'm just going to buy a nickel. First of all, let's talk about AFSK, okay? That's audio frequency shift keying. It's a modulation technique which you vary the tones in the transmission. It's a vary of tones which give you an encoded signal, okay? So one tone set of tones is equal to a character, and it varies through the course of what you're sending. And what's a spurious emission? Now you might have touched that on your tech class, but let's go over it again. It's a spurious emission is an emission on a frequency or frequencies which are outside the necessary bandwidth and the level of which may be reduced without affecting the corresponding transmission of information. In other words, you have control over spurious emissions. Going to buy another nickel. So keeping that in mind, okay, with the answer B, improper action of ALC distorts the signal and can cause spurious emissions. If you don't adjust that ALC correctly, if you have that putting out too much output, it's going to carry through, it's going to give you too wide a signal, you're going to be out of band, and it's going to create interference on adjacent bands, and that's what they're talking about there. So the main thing is, if you're going to use ALC in a transmission like that, that you keep it adjusted correctly and that you don't drive it too hard. And if you're not using ALC, that you set at a level that is acceptable for proper transmission. So I hope I made some sense out of that. Let's see if there's any questions on it. Nope, I must have done all right. Okay, let's throw it back then to Roger for question number three.
Okay, Gary, thank you very much. This is W4RFJ with question number three, G4B05. Why is high input impedance desired for a voltmeter? Out of the group of answers, A, it improves the frequency response. B, it decreases battery consumption in the meter. C, it improves the resolution of the readings. And D, it decreases the loading on circuits being measured. And the answer, of course, is D. Let's talk about that for a second or two. Let me grab a nickel. And I guess the best way that I can explain this is to get back to Ohm's law. Everybody knows that Ohm's law, when you put resistances in parallel with each other, the lowest resistance, actually your total resistance becomes less than the lowest resistance in that parallel circuit. So if you want to take a measurement, especially with a voltmeter, and not load the circuit down, in other words, make the resistance less than what the actual circuit resistance is, And that's also another issue, because you always will. You add resistance, you're going to make it lower, but the whole idea is not to impact the total resistance of the circuit when you're making your measurement. And with that, I'll pause for questions. Anybody have any questions on this? Please call W4RFJ. Okay, I guess everybody got that. I hope I explained that correctly. Gary, I guess it's over to you for number four.
All right, Roger. And it's like I always say, be it ever so humble, there's no law like Ohm's. But that being as it may, let's go to question number four, shall we? And that's G4B11. G4B11. And it reads, which of the following must be connected to an antenna analyzer when it's being used for SWR measurements? Here's your choices. A receiver. B, a transmitter. C, antenna and feed line. Or D, all of these choices are correct. Well, an antenna analyzer is a great piece of equipment, and it's something that folks, as they advance in the hobby, really, you know, it's a great thing to get your hands on one and learn how to use it. And the answer to this particular question is C, an antenna and feed line. Duh. I mean, you're not going to analyze an antenna without it being hooked up to the analyzer, right? So that's an easy one. That's a gift, really, you know, that when you think about it. You're just not going anywhere without having an antenna and feed line connected to that analyzer. So let's see if there's any questions on that one. We'll throw it open right now. Okay, I guess everybody realized that was a freebie. That's not bad. So let's go to question. Boy, we're whipping right through them. Let's go to question number five here. Question number five for Roger.
Okay, thank you, Gary. This is W4RFJ with question number five, which is G4B12. What problem can occur when making measurements on an antenna system with an antenna analyzer? The group of answers are A, permanent damage to the analyzer may occur if it is operated into a high SWR. B, strong signals from nearby transmitters can affect the accuracy of your measurements. C, the analyzer can be damaged if measurements outside the ham band are attempted. And D, connecting the analyzer to an antenna can cause it to absorb harmonics. Well, the answer is B. Strong signals from nearby transmitters can affect the accuracy of measurements. An antenna analyzer is a very sensitive device. I use it in my ham station quite a bit when tuning up my antenna or my bridge. I just went brain dead. Sorry about that. When I'm tuning up the antenna, I actually tune my analyzer to the frequency on the radio, which the radio picks up as a tone, and then I adjust the box for zero SWR, and then I switch the box into the radio, disconnecting the antenna analyzer. But the point is that this analyzer, if you have a nearby transmitter, and it really doesn't matter what frequency it is, you know, your son could be in the driveway talking on 2 meters, and you're trying to check the analyze an antenna in your backyard, and it's going to mess up the readings because of the sensitivity in the meter. I guess we'll pause for questions. This is W4RFJ. Okay, I hear nobody asking questions, and my son did that to me once. That's why I use that as an example. Gary, I guess it's over to you with question number six.
Well, this is one reason why I'm glad my son never got his technician. He's in Virginia anyway, but that's okay. You know, I would throw something in here too, that, you know, when we're asking for questions, it doesn't have to specifically be to the material that we're reading right now. If you have a question on something that you've come across in your studies, all right, you can throw that one in too. You know, we'll take them all. It's fine. You know, so don't be afraid to shout out and ask a question, okay? G4C05, that's question number six. And this is a good one. This is something that you're really going to, you know, find useful in a practical sense. So here we go. What might be the problem If you receive an RF burn when touching your equipment while transmitting on an HF band, assuming the equipment is connected to a ground rod. All right? So here we go. A, a flat braid rather than a round wire has been used for the ground wire. B, insulated wire has been used for the ground wire. C, the ground rod is resonant. Or D, the ground wire has high impedance on that frequency. All right, I'm going to buy a nickel for a minute. Your answer is D, the ground wire has high impedance on that frequency. Now, Roger was talking a little bit about impedance earlier, and let's go into this a little depth, okay? High RF voltages on the enclosures of station equipment can be caused by resonant ground connections. And assuming the equipment is connected to a ground rod, if you receive an RF burn while touching your equipment while transmitting on an HF band, the ground wire has high impedance on that frequency. Now, one good way to avoid unwanted effects of stray RF energy in the amateur station is connect all equipment grounds together. And I'm going to repeat that. Connect all equipment grounds together. You're going to come across that multiple times. You're going to see references to that all over the place, and it's one of the best pieces of advice that anybody setting up a station can work with, okay? Let me buy another nickel. Now, while running ground connections, keep in mind that it's an RF ground that we're talking about, so the length of the wire from the tuner or the rig to the ground is important. Keep it as short as possible. Now, it's the whole point of an RF ground, the whole point of getting an RF burn or having issues like that, it's not a wicked problem at the lower frequencies, 80 meters or 40 meters, but man, you get up to 15 meters or above, just 6 feet of wire is already near an eighth wavelength. So guess what? You're going to be running into trouble with that. I'm going to throw it open to questions right now. Anybody have any questions to ask about what we were just talking about? Okay, no questions about anything that we were just talking about. Any other questions out there? Don't be afraid.
Six, Victor.
Six, Victor. Hello there, sir, and come on aboard.
Yeah, I'm going to let you shoot me when this class is over because I'm going to make a pun here. One of my favorite comments is, ground is not ground the world around. And another way of looking at high impedance, and I'm talking high impedance, is an open circuit. KY6V, go ahead, Gary.
That's very good. I like the ground. Isn't that ground the world? But the high impedance, that's right. An open circuit. That's about as high as an impedance as you're going to get. I mean, you know, you're talking the Grand Canyon there. So both good points, and I hope folks were latching on to that one. Thank you, and it's great to hear from you. Let's go on to the next question. The chief is standing in the wings, and we'll bring him aboard.
Well, I'm sitting here thinking, why did I throw these questions in here? Question number 7 is G4C06, and I guess I was hoping to stay into that resonant ground thing, but I'll go ahead and read it anyway. What effect can be caused by a resonant ground connection? The answers are: overheating of ground straps is A, B, corrosion of the ground rod, C, high RF voltages on enclosures of station equipment, and D, a ground loop. Well, the answer, of course, is C, high RF voltages on enclosures of station equipment. And as Gary and Gordon have explained, you know, when you have a ground system, a ground wire system that is resonant, it's going to pose an impedance. You don't want an impedance. You want zero impedance going from your station equipment to ground. And that's for the RF side. I think Gary might want to get into this a little bit more in the next question. So I'll pause for questions. I don't want to talk about ground loops yet. I think that's Gary's spot. Any questions, any at all, please call W4RFJ. Okay, well, I'm not hearing anybody. I guess, Gary, you're the answer man. Go ahead for number 8.
Okay, thank you, Roger. The one thing that you want to keep in mind with anything that's going to ground is to keep it as short as possible. Keep your leads as short as possible. When you think about it, what do you have? You have a length of wire, right? The longer that wire is, the higher the impedance is. So the idea here, just as Roger said, you want that to be zero impedance. You just want no resistance going to ground. You want that to be the easiest path for that signal to take, and that's why we keep them short. So when in doubt, you know, just figure out the shortest way to get that to ground, because you'll never be in trouble that way. And how can you get in trouble? Well, that brings us to question number 8, doesn't it, which is G4C09, and we're going to be talking about ground loops. How can a ground loop be avoided? Now, here's your choices. A, connect all ground conductors in series. Or B, connect the AC neutral conductor to the ground wire. Or C, avoid using lock washers and star washers when making a good ground connection. Or D, connect all ground conductors to a single point. Well, the answer, of course, is D, connect all ground conductors to a single point. You know, you're listening to something and you're getting some reports and somebody comes back and says, there's a hum on your signal. So let me buy a nickel. Well, why is it humming? Well, either it doesn't know the words or you have a ground loop. A ground loop can be avoided by connecting all ground conductors to a single point. A common symptom of a ground loop somewhere in your station could be you're receiving reports of hum on your transmitted signal. Nobody, and let me repeat that, nobody wants to hear a signal that's got hum on it, honestly. There's enough problems, you know, going through QRM without having a hummy signal. So if you just keep some basic tenets in mind, if you find a single point to ground to, you keep your grounds short, and you in one bus, which is what I use. I actually use electrician's parts. I actually use ground buses from panel boards, and that is my station ground. I have everything feeding into that, and then to a grounded to a water pipe. That works very well for me. But you keep them all short, you keep them at a single point, and you're going to stay out of trouble. And that's my advice to you. And my next advice to you is to listen to Roger with question 9. Take it away, Roger.
And this is W4RFJ. The next question, number 9, is G4D02. Which of the following describes how a speech processor affects a transmitted single sideband phone signal? A, it increases peak power. B, it increases average power. C, it reduces harmonic distortion. Or D, it reduces intermodulation distortion. And let me take a pause here to reset the timers, and I will give an explanation. Oh, yeah, the answer is B. It increases average power. Let me reset my nickel here. Okay, a speech processor is not that difficult to understand. If you keep in mind that, you know, your audio has levels that are high and low. The amplitude levels are high and low throughout your speech pattern. And what a speech processor does is it amplifies the low amplitude parts of your speech and brings down the peaks so that you have a nice level of output. And in a sense, overall, it doesn't change the speech, it just changes your average power because of bringing those lows up and the peaks down. The lows are a lot bigger than the peaks are, so that's how come it increases average power. Let me pause, see if there's any questions. Again, I would like to reiterate Gary's plea that don't just restrict any questions to what we're covering tonight. I know for a fact there's a total of 65 questions, and I was very perplexed when I had to pick the questions out of there. But anyway, if there's any questions concerning any part of the question pool, please. If I don't know the answer and Gordon doesn't know the answer, I'm pretty sure Gary does. And if Gary doesn't, we got Mike hanging in the wings. So any questions, please, W4RFJ. Well, it was a good try. I guess it's over to you, Gary, for number 10.
You can lead a horse to water, but, you know, you got to ask the question. So that's okay. I'm just hoping everybody is soaking it in and you know, applying this to their independent study. Because that is another thing, too. You know, these classes can only cover a little piece of the puzzle. That's what Roger was talking about, you know, with all those questions. You can't cover everything that's on that exam, obviously, in our little sessions here on the air. You have to do your own study. You have to do independent study. And you will learn the rest of the story from that. We can fill you in on certain points, and certainly we're all here if anybody wants to ask a question and get an answer from us about something maybe we're not covering in class. We can definitely do that too. So don't be afraid to speak up. That's the main thing. Okay. We're on question 10 right now. We're heading right to the end here, and we're talking about speech processing. Okay. And Roger gave a very nice explanation of what it does. I'll give you a little bit of an expanded explanation on that too. Let me just buy a nickel. In broadcast television and radio, the audio uses a lot of processing. That's why when you listen to music on the radio, you never hear one song that's louder than the other. It's all very uniform. And when you hear a guy on the radio talking, or a girl, their voice sounds great, you know, because you have audio processing on it, okay? And they use compressors and limiters to accomplish that. And we use, in ham radio, the basic the basic tool of audio processing is the compressor, and all modern rigs have that built in, and you can adjust that, you know, a little bit one way or the other, and that's what we're talking about in question 10. Which of the following can be the result of an incorrectly adjusted speech processor? All right, here we go. A, will you get distorted speech? Or B, splatter? Or C, excessive background noise? Or D, all of these choices are correct? Well, guess what? The answer is D. All of these choices are correct. Again, what we were talking about earlier, where we were with the AFSK processing, with sending the ALC for that. Anytime you overdrive an input, you're going to get these symptoms: distortion, splatter. You have a microphone, not a tone being generated here, and that's going to suck up background noise. And let me put it to perspective. After I buy a nickel, it's like trying to put too much water in the pipe. You ever listen to 11 meters? That's CB. You'll hear lots of lousy audio there. These guys have these nickel and dime compressors, and they'll crank it all the way up, and all you hear is background noise, you know, and it's like in a bunch of distorted speech. Well, that's, you don't want to sound like that. and it's not right to sound like that. Again, we just did the symptoms, you know. You're going to be out of band, you're going to be sounding lousy, and it's just no good. So adjust your equipment for a clean, high-quality input. That's the way to do it, and certainly getting that audio good is a lot of fun, at least for me anyway. I have my FTDX set up to deliver near AM broadcast quality output on SSB. It sounds really good, and but it's fun. You just don't do that all in one night. So something to shoot for too. So good clean audio, and keep it that way, darn it. Okay, we'll go back to the chief now for question number 11.
Okay, well, I was hoping to make a comment earlier. You said something about leading a horse to water. Well, we got a poster up in our office where I work. I'm a technical instructor, and it says you can lead people to knowledge, but you can't make them think. So That's what we're hoping to do, is lead you guys and gals to knowledge. Question number 11, G4E07. Which of the following may cause interference to be heard in the receiver of an HF radio installed in a recent model vehicle? And the answers to choose from are the battery charging system, the fuel delivery system, the vehicle, oh wait a minute, that's B, the fuel delivery system, C, the vehicle control computer, or D, all of these choices are correct. Well, guess what? The answer is D. It can be the battery charging system, it can be the fuel delivery system, it can be a vehicle control computer. There's just so much new electronics on these vehicles anymore that can affect what your radio is hearing. I guess that's about as simple as I can get with that one. I'll pause for any questions. Again, remember, 65 questions in this pool that was set aside for today for G4. So please feel free to ask any of them. We'll take it as a challenge if we can get somebody to ask a question. W4RFJ, take canvassing for questions.
This is KD0CDQ. Good question there. Both of our vehicles are kind of old, 10, 11 years old. I really wonder what is causing all the problems in the new cars, but I do have friends who have bought late model cars, and they are picking up a lot of this noise, and it becomes a problem trying to find out how to eliminate it, how to isolate it and get around it. That's a good question you picked there. Roger, good question. Over.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. It just brought back some bad memories. I had an Explorer, that had a fuel pump in it. When that fuel pump went off, which was constant, I couldn't get the noise to go down in my receiver. It just tore up the radio across the entire spectrum. So that's something you got to look for when you're doing a mobile install. All right, hearing no other inputs, or if somebody does have an input, please jump in. I'm going to pass it back over to Gary for question number 12 and the final question for the evening.
Well, thank you, Roger, and it just brought back some fond memories for me. I loved my Explorer. That was the best car I ever had. I did. I loved that car dearly. It was Henry, Henry the Ford. He was great. He was just. I really do wish I'd never gotten rid of that. I never tried to put an HF rig in it, but a great car, you know. And that's one thing too that you have to realize that installing a rig in a mobile situation is a different ball game than setting up the ham shack at home. You have some totally different challenges to deal with, and one of which I think I don't know, I'll throw this open for comment too at the end of the question here, but I think a lot of it is CPU noise from the onboard computers. I think that tends to be the cause of the interference, and I don't know, I've never had to deal with it, but I think the first thing I would do is try to shield the onboard computer, because the newer cars are so computer driven, it's got to be a consideration anyway. Let me buy a nickel and we go on to question number 12, the last and final of tonight. This is question G4E05, and it goes, which of the following most limits the effectiveness of an HF mobile transceiver operating in the 75 meter band? Okay, here's your choices. A, picket fencing signal variation, or B, the wire gauge of the DC power line to the transceiver, C, the antenna system, or D, FCC rules limiting mobile power output on the 75-meter band. Well, the answer, of course, is C, the antenna system. You're only going to go as far as your antenna is going to let you, and it's especially true when you have a mobile operation. Okay, some of the antennas that they use on vehicles are pretty interesting. I know screwdriver antennas are pretty popular, and they pack a pretty good punch too. I've actually heard of folks using those as base station antennas. But you've got to develop a good system of grounding, a particularly good system of grounding when you're in a vehicle, and that's half your signal right there. So a lot of challenges, and you have to put a lot of thought into the antenna system. So that's basically it. Let's see if anybody has any questions right now.
Six, Victor.
Six, Victor. Go right ahead, sir.
Yeah, thanks, Gary. Thanks, Raj. Well, you know, there's a lot of tips when you're talking about putting in a mobile installation. And there's some very good literature that you can find on the subject if you do a little browsing through the Internet. But one of the major ones that I would purport is to run your DC line from your transceiver directly to the battery. Don't try to hog in and grab 12 volts off of the cigarette lighter, or don't go into the fuse block and pick it up there. Run some good heavy cable up to the battery of the car, and of course fuse it at the battery also. I want to take you back. Let me buy a nickel here. You guys buying nickels, I guess I can. Back to your question number 10 on D03. You had me laughing, Gary. You were talking about the broadcast industry and the compressors and the equalizers. I don't think you mentioned equalizers. Well, my question to you, if you get this perfect round sound on voice passages and this perfect round sound on music passages, how come when the commercial comes on it's so blooming loud? Over.
Oh, I know the answer to that, too. You think about it. Most of those, especially the agency stuff, comes to you already heavily compressed, so you're compressing the compressors, so the dynamic range is, you know, just that much more limited. So you have a limited dynamic range feeding into the audio processor of the station, which in turn brings it up to, you know, the preset level, you know, let's say 0 dB, and bam, you're talking loud. So which is basically all I ever did with the stuff that I produced too. I always ran it through the compressor before I made the dub. Back to you.
Yeah. Well, you know that being in the business, and I know that being in the business. But you try to explain that to somebody that's not in the field and is totally annoyed at what's happening on their radio. Any rate, I just had to throw that one in the hopper. Sorry, Gary. KY6V, back to you.
Hey, I'm not. I was glad you asked that question. or made that comment anyway, and we should have you know, if we have, I don't know if we have time or if you want to get into it right now, but you have a famous story about a mobile operation. Do you know what I'm talking about?
If that was directed to me, no, I'm not with you yet. But go ahead, sir.
It had to do with a signal that was being picked up at a remote location that dealt with used cars.
Are you talking about my Phoenix, Arizona gig when I turned on Greyhound Bus Depot?
Yes, exactly.
You want me to tell that story?
Well, I think we have a few minutes, and if Mike and Roger would like to have that introduced, I think we should have that.
All right, well, I'll make it short and sweet. Spent some time out in Phoenix, Arizona years ago, and I was rolling into town one night with a friend aboard, and we passed the Greyhound Bus Depot in downtown Phoenix. I was running a Stancor ST203A, 2E26 in the final, AM modulated on 10 meters. And I was talking with one of the locals. As I went by the Greyhound Bus Depot, all of a sudden I heard myself coming over about 6 to 10 trumpet speakers that they had all over the concourse where the buses came in and went out. Let me buy a nickel. So I looked over at my pal and I said, hey, let's have some fun. We drove around the block, came down the alley behind the Greyhound Bus Depot. Stopped just a little bit short where the buses pulled in, and I keyed that 203 Alpha, and I said, ladies and gentlemen, listen up. Do you realize that Trailway Bus Depot is just up the block, only a block and a half away from Greyhound? Do you know that their seats are more comfortable? Do you know that their drivers are better trained and better paid? May I suggest that you do a little investigating before you buy a ticket with Greyhound? Put it in gear and took off. It hit the Phoenix Gazette the next morning. Phantoms hit Greyhound. Go ahead, Gary.
and I guess, you know, you could just say it was pretty much a public service that you were doing there, you know? And it's a great story. It really is. I'm glad you shared that with us. It's awesome to hear. I guess that's the last question, and certainly how are you going to top a story like that? So, Mike, we'll send it back to you.
I got a comment.
Okay, there we go. I'm in trouble on this end. I was laughing so much, I think I messed something up on this end. That is a funny story. That is one for the book, that's for sure. Well, you know, about so many things that you bring to mind going over these questions, like all of my boxes, everything is grounded together. I don't want to find out what a hot box feels like when I touch the metal or anything like that. Everything's, I just put them all together and let it lay. Don't mess with that. Also, with when Gordon mentioned to run your hot wires from your radio straight to the battery, definitely. I don't cut in anywhere. And we always warn people, don't be looking for wires to join into. Go straight through. And I've also found, you look on YouTube, a lot of fellows have trouble trying to find how to get through the firewall. I found that if you put your model car into the YouTube and you ask, how do I run a wire through the firewall, you're going to find your own automobile right there, and somebody's already done it and tells you how to get through the wall. It was so simple in my Honda that, you're trying to think, how am I going to drill through that heavy steel under there upside down on my head? But you don't have to. So most cars, there's a way to get through that firewall that's already existing, but we just don't see it. Yes, right to the battery, and I also put a fuse on both wires, both ends, just to have it that way. Very good. But you bring up so much to mind with these questions. They may seem simple, but they're only simple until something goes wrong. And I've never tried to broadcast over a commercial system, but that I can see how that can happen. Because what I've been noticing, maybe this interests Gordon quite a bit. As you know, all of these commercials and radio programs are all run by computer. And so, it seems to me when they don't have enough commercials and it's like a dead air time, you kind of dead air on the radio, and then you'll hear a voice come in that may say 45 seconds, 30 seconds. Well, of late, I've been hearing somebody when there's a break between the commercial and the program, which is out of state, of course, coming in through ABC, CBS or something, I've heard a voice say 73. And I've heard it a few times, and it catches my ear, because then I want to hear it again, and of course they don't do it again. But there's somebody locally on one of the networks that when there's that gap between the commercial and the broadcast, he says 73, very quietly, very level. Interesting, isn't it, Gordon, what goes on with the automatic computerization of radio programs, where the engineers really can't do anything till it times out, or whatever they want to call it, over.
Well, I like to think on that story that the guy saying 73s is a ham. And, of course, the numbers are a countdown sequence for queuing at the right time. Roger jumped in there when you were getting a little trouble getting started the last transmission. Roger, what you got, Tiger? Over.
Second, KB3IGH.
I guess I doubled with somebody. It isn't important. I'm standing by. W4RK.
Okay. John, good evening. You're getting the tail end of class number 4 on the general, which you just passed here recently. Over.
Yeah, I'm sorry for doubling with the other gentleman there, so I apologize there. Yes, I passed it, when was it, Saturday the 13th of June. And I just received something in the mail from Mr. Gordon West himself, so that was pretty neat. So, good evening, everyone.
Oh, what did you get from Gordon West? Congratulations on the course, or what?
Yeah, he sent me two little certificates saying, you know, congratulations on passing your general and a pat on the back on that one. Another one that, you know, I said, you know, in a letter to him that participated in Aries racing stuff and that type of thing. And he gave me another pat on the back and sent me another little certificate saying, you know, congratulations on that. And he threw in a little patch for a shirt that has, you know, the California Bear and the Star, and has California Rescue Communications on it there. So there you go.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's great. Neat job. I thought that bear out in California was smoky. Having been raised in that grand state out there. All right, well, ladies and gentlemen, we're at 50 minutes into the hour here. I'm going to turn it back to you, Mike, and let you put the ribbons on it. Please remember to give us a little pause here as we close down the recordings when you're ready. KD0CDQ and the group from KY6V.
This is KD0CDQ. May I remind folks that we just had a good pair. I really enjoyed Roger and Gary this week, Sunday and tonight. Very good. It was really a pleasure. It felt like I had just buddies sitting around with a cup of coffee together. It was really good. Very well done. But I want to remind people, next week we're going to start getting into the questions with the diagram. There's some diagrams you're going to have to copy, and they're on the website. They're on the South Cars website. I would copy the diagram, and also there's that common schematic symbols used in circuit diagrams. It's one sheet of paper, an 8x10, but it's got just about every type of symbol that you'd run into in radio electronics, it looks like. I've enjoyed this page. I've always kept this page handy, and it's also available on the website. So I would download those and keep them, because it's online, but you got to hunt around for it. It's so nice to have one sheet of paper when you're looking at a diagram, and you can look at the sheet and see, oh, that's what they're showing, that's what they're showing, because the symbols are right here. They're all on one sheet of paper. Now, I'm going to let it drop. And my button's getting a little bit slow. It's interesting. Now, next week, I've got a question to you, Gordon. I know I'm up next Sunday and next Tuesday, and I'm supposed to be with Craig, WE2Q. Has he called in with his question as yet? Gordon, back to you.
No, he has not, and he's not answering my emails either. If you recall, I sent you an email, Mike, and I said that I would call him early this week. It probably won't be this evening. It'll probably be tomorrow night and find out what his situation is. If he's tied up or he's got a problem or something like that, I'll put some questions together, Mike. Don't worry about it. Over.
I'd appreciate that, Gordon. Although this is school break, summer school is finished, and I don't go back for another couple of weeks, so I'm free. But yes, that helps me rest quite a bit. But really, Gordon, I'll give you credit for the teams you've put together. All through the years on these questions that we've done through South Cars, I've really enjoyed the instructors. I've really enjoyed the people that you have put together to present this. And that's a big compliment to everyone. And let's put Kathy in there, too, because Paul's not here this week, but he, too. And, of course, we still feel for Bill. Such good people you have had. If nothing else, it puts the human touch into this very, what could be, dry subject. A lot of these questions are not exciting, but they're interesting because of the character of the voices of the people you selected, Gordon. There's a quality in their voice. You know they really want to help. They're really interested, and they're down-to-earth people. We don't have any high-tech people that speak down to us. Nobody's speaking down. Now, with the questions that I have for next week, I've got some long answers, and I'm not going to use all of those answers that I put down. I'm going to keep it light. So, if anyone has any questions about what we've covered thus far, we're halfway through the question pool. Letting it drop. I forgot to put on my stopwatch, so I don't know where I was. So if anybody has any questions, if you don't want to do it on the air, send them to us. Send to us in a www. You know, you don't have to use the W's anymore. I found that out with my wife, that when you're sending up, when you're getting on a .com, you don't have to use those W's anymore for some reason. Don't need them. I'm digging here looking for the right thing. I've got it here. The address to send any questions you may have, I believe, is a www. Which you can leave off. voip.southcars.com. I believe the voip.southcars.com. Send us any questions you have. You know, if you don't want to do it on the air, I'm sure that Gordon will pick that up and he'll give you back your answer, either through an email or we'll do it on the air. But you don't have to be on the air to do it. And that's also when the classes are finished. When they're finished, we're still human beings. We're still around. We're still interested in the students. So if you have any questions that pop to mind, let us know, especially when you take your test. Let us know when you pass it so we can pass on and give you a gold star for that. Anybody have any questions before we shut this down? This is Kilo Delta Zero, Charlie Delta Quebec, on the South Coast Amateur Radio Service doing the general test questions. Anyone have any comments? Come aboard now.
Yeah, correction on that email, Mike. Six Victor.
Yes, please do that. I was just reaching. I thought that might be it. Please give us the right email to get to you. Over.
Yeah, it'll get it to South Cars. It's actually VOIP at voipnet.southcars.com. Now, that is our email address for the South Coast Amateur Radio VOIP wing, if you want to put it that way. The www, which you don't need to use anymore, voip.southcars.com, is our website, Mike, and if anybody sends an email to that, I'm afraid it'll bounce right back at them. Over.
Thank you, Gordon, for clarifying that. You know, my button that I use as a PPT here, PTT, is getting odd. I'm touching it, and it takes about almost a second for it to respond. I may have to pull another key and try another key in the future. Okay, let's do a minute of silence here so that Gordon can disconnect the control, the tapes that are recording this program. So let's give it a minute of silence, and Gordon will let us know when we're clear. This is KD0CDQ finishing off the South Cars Amateur Radio Service General Question Pool. Over.
This has been the South Cars Outreach Program. Join us again next time for another in our series of training sessions for amateur radio operators. Goodbye for now.